we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices radio show, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM, Co-op Radio, CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, October the 14th, 2016. I am your host, Allison Cole. I'm joined here today by our guest co-host, Sinead Sanders.
Hello.
And Shauna Smith.
Hi there.
And our co-host, Jen Dobell, is in here with me.
Hi there.
Welcome, everyone. Today's show is dedicated to the end of trophy hunting, that is, the needless pursuit and murder of wild animals for the sole purpose of human recreation. To start the show, we'll be speaking about local issues here close to home in British Columbia, and we'll have Val Murray on the show to tell us about the annual trophy hunt of grizzly bears in BC. Val is the co-founder of the organization called Justice for BC Grizzlies, and she is working to end the trophy hunt of these wild and endangered beings in our province, and she will be telling us about the organization's campaign. Then for our feature interview, we'll have Bruce Young on the show. He is the co-director of a dreadfully fascinating and significant film called Blood Lions, which will make its Canadian screening debut here in Vancouver on October 30th at 12:30 p.m. at the Rio Theatre. Every single day in South Africa, at least 2 to 3 captive bred lions are being killed in canned hunts. This is a growing industry that has boomed in the last 6 years, and no one is doing anything about it until now with the making of this film. Bruce will be on the show to tell us about the canned lion hunting industry in South Africa and what we can do to end it. That interview is coming up in about 28 minutes, and you can listen to an extended version of it on our podcast at animalvoices.org and on iTunes. So, Shauna and Sinead, you had a chance to watch the film yourself, Blood Lions. And Shauna, what did you think of it?
I don't think I've ever been more angry in my entire life.
Wow. That's quite an impact.
It was. My roommate and I watched it together, and we were yelling at the screen pretty much the whole movie. It was just extremely shocking. I did not know that canned lion hunting existed. I only knew that lion hunting existed. So that was really shocking for me. It was crazy to think that they, you know, they take anyone that doesn't even know how to use a gun, and they pay an upwards of $15,000 to go and pick a lion off of the internet.
Yeah, starting at $15,000 for a lion, that's true. The prices go up.
It's crazy how much they spend just to take an animal's life, an animal that can't defend itself because it's only been bred captivity and only knows, you know, human interaction through being fed and whatnot. So that was really shocking to see. And I don't know. I mean, Sinead, what did you think?
Yeah, it was pretty shocking. There was a lot of stuff that I certainly didn't know about before, and it was just incredible to consider that anybody would want to do this, you know, and you know what drives people to spend thousands of dollars to go kill animals just for fun, you know?
It's psychotic behavior.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk about. I mean, are all canned lion hunters, hunters, are they psychotic? I know people who hunt. I mean, what do we think is happening in the minds of hunters? There were several hunters interviewed in the film, and I was quite shocked at the responses that they gave as to why they do this.
It was pretty crazy, especially because one of the things that they really preached to everyone is that by hunting, they're doing conservation, you know, because they create this industry where only lions are bred in captivity, so they're not killing any of the lions in the wild, which is just the most ludicrous thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
Mm-hmm. And there were scientists in the show that talked about how lions and captive raised lions have not been able to successfully be reintroduced into the wild. And so the justification of raising these lions and shooting some, but releasing them into so-called game parks, which is not the wild, you know, it's absurd. And it sounds like a lot of justification to keep people doing what they're doing. And, and feeling okay about it.
Exactly. I mean, like when they brought out the stats and they showed that canine lion hunting doesn't even give that much money to the economy. Like, I think it was only like, you know, $9 million versus...
It was 1% versus the 99% of tourism.
Exactly. Right. Of like safaris and stuff like that, mm-hmm. where people go
to
observe.
However, saying that they are making a lot from the industry.
Of course they are. But it's just crazy to me that they would keep doing it when there's so many other ways that they could make money. And it's more humane, of course.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's also the issue that was brought up in the film that... people say canned hunting is abhorrent because the animals have no means of escaping or defending themselves. But even when you look at trophy hunting in any other situation, wild spaces are so limited and animals are being hunted in these special protected areas and stuff. And it just, animals have limited space already, whether or not they are raised in captivity.
That's very true. Yeah, that's a good point.
I do you know what stunned me about one of the hunter interviews that was done? It was with a woman, a female hunter, and she said something that really stunned me. Maybe it made you scream at the TV, Shauna. She said, "I am an animal lover, therefore I am a hunter."
Yeah, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life. Like, I was very ashamed for humanity in that moment. Mm-hmm. But, you know, one of the positive things about the interview other than create or sorry about the show other than creating awareness is the fact that Botswana, which is just above South Africa, they and the government has worked together with the public to abolish canned lion hunting in their country, so now it doesn't exist. And it's a really positive movement because the South African government tried to, they actually won that battle, and then it was appealed, and then the canned lion hunting industry one. So it's great to see that Botswana was able to abolish it completely, because it shows that it can be done in South Africa. And not only that, it shows that possibly commercial farming in other countries can be abolished as well.
Well, they definitely are taking a stand, and it was very enlightening to see that interview with that government official from Botswana. Thanks for your thoughts. I look forward to our interview later in the show with Bruce Young. He's the director of this magnificent film. And I just wanted to remind people that we do have a ticket giveaway, two pairs of tickets to the Vancouver screening. It's the Canadian premiere of this film that's happening on October 30th at the Rio Theater. Bruce Young, the director, will be there for Q&A afterwards. And Jen, you're going to be there too, right? Yes, Jen's going to be asking some of the questions. And if you still have a chance to win tickets, we're going to announce the winners at the end of the show. Just send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com for your chance to win a ticket. Just say you want to enter. So I wanted to remind everyone that we are in the midst of our fall member drive here right now at Co-op Radio. And what that means is it's the time of the year, one of the few times of the year, where we ask you to please support Co-op Radio by giving us a financial contribution. We need to raise a certain amount of money to keep our show on the air here. And I think it's just really important that we are supported. What we're doing here is great work. We're all volunteers here at Co-op Radio, and we do need your help. We do need financial support. All of these donations, they are tax deductible if you give over $25. And you can make a donation right now if you want, or after the show, by simply calling 604-684-8494. Or you can go on to cooperadio.org and click on Make a Donation and say that you support Animal Voices on there, and that money will go towards keeping our show on the air. Thank you so much.
The Fall Member Drive is on now till midnight on Sunday, October 23rd. Become a member, renew, or make a donation. This fall, we are encouraging you to give an extra $15 to help with renovations and move costs as we return to our roots in the heart of the city. You can find more information or donate on our website, cooperadio.org, or call in now to 604-684-8494.
All right, so we've got a couple of events coming up this weekend, actually. Tomorrow morning, as I think they're doing this weekly now, Liberation BC is hosting another vigil at the Hallmark Chicken Slaughterhouse at Commercial and Hastings, where, join activists, raise awareness of the suffering that goes on behind the walls. Signs are provided just to educate the public about what's going on, get people thinking about it. That's 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the northeast corner of Hastings and Commercial Drive. And you can find more information at liberationbc.org or their Facebook page, Liberation BC Chicken Slaughterhouse Vigils. Tomorrow night, local animal advocacy group The Fur Bearers is holding an art show and fundraiser at Black Sun Studio and Art Gallery at 1269 Clark Drive. This is from 7 to 10 p.m. It's by donation, and just go enjoy wine, snacks, and bid on art by local artists, all to benefit the work of the Fur Bearers. And for those unfamiliar with the Fur Bearers, they work to end the commercial fur trade and promote coexistence with wildlife. You can find out more information about them on their Facebook page, facebook.com/furfree. And again, that's 7 to 10 p.m. tomorrow at Black Sun Studio, suite number 100 at 1269 Clark Drive. If you have an animal-friendly event that you'd like to have announced on the show, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. And now we have our interview with Val Murray of Justice for BC Grizzlies. She's a co-founder of Justice for BC Grizzlies, a local advocacy group which aims to end the unjust grizzly bear hunt in British Columbia by ensuring that the hunt is a key issue in the upcoming 2017 provincial election. Today she's here to tell us about the issues and about her campaign, which is part of a citizens' movement to take action. Hi, Val, and welcome to the Animal Voices Show.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Well, thanks very much for being here. To start off, for listeners who don't know, can you shed some light for us on the BC Grizzly Trophy Hunt? How did it start? How does it work? And who is hunting grizzly bears and why?
Right, good question. Well, other than 4 months under the NDP in the spring of 2001, when there was a moratorium on hunting grizzly bears, they've been hunted since before European settlement. But in 1996, when the numbers clearly were dropping, the province went to a limited entry hunt for resident hunters. That's basically a lottery system where residents put their name in to hunt a bear. And there's also an annual quota system for guide outfitters who have a particular guiding territory. And they are allocated a certain number of bears that they can kill in their territory per year. Non-residents have to hire a guide outfitter. Residents may do so if they wish. And grizzlies are not hunted for food, typically, due to the high contamination of bacteria. They're hunted for their head, their paws, and their hides. And trophy hunters, they target the largest bears, which harms the genetic diversity of the species, of course. But then they also take about a third of the 300 per year that are killed are females, and they will leave tiny cubs to perish. Judging from photos that we see of trophy hunters with their grizzly kills, the incentive is dominance, power, and ego gratification. Sometimes the hunters will bait grizzlies, drawing them to food. That's what I would say about...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds pretty crazy to me. So how did Justice for BC Grizzlies come together then?
You know, it was a long process. Over many years of writing letters to editors and the government, attending rallies and donating to conservation groups, I wanted to do more, and I wondered if there were citizens out there in BC who felt as I did about the bears. So I wanted to launch a website, which was a big learning curve for me, and I reached out to Barb Murray, who's no relation. We have the same name, last name, but no relation. Barb is the founder of Bears Matter, extremely knowledgeable and has worked in bear conservation for more years than I have. So we worked really hard to stir up interest through social media and interviews and a press conference on September 13th in Vancouver. The central action of the Justice for BC Grizzlies movement is to take the pledge, and that can be done through my website. Currently, we have over 1,100 pledgers from BC all around the province, Smithers, Fort St. John, Prince Rupert, Kootenays, all over the province, not just the Lower Mainland. And these are voters who are talking to other BC voters and political candidates about ending this unacceptable hunt of our grizzly bears.
Oh, great. Well, given that I saw that a survey conducted last year found that 91% of people living in BC say they're opposed to hunting animals for sport. Mm-hmm. So why is this something that we have to fight for? Why does our government continue to support the trophy hunt in the face of such opposition?
I know it's such a good question. We've asked that question ourselves, and I'm glad that you're airing that. The closest I can come to answering that is that the government just doesn't believe it. They say that that Insights West poll is not accurate.
Wow.
They don't believe the 91%, and our premier continues to insist that the grizzly bear hunt is unpopular in the Lower Mainland, and just chooses not to pay attention to that. You know, you add to that 5,000 people in the Kootenays who submitted a petition this year opposing the trophy hunt. In addition, there's about 39,000 names that on a petition started by Barb Murray and continued by Pacific Wild. These are people from BC and Canada and outside who oppose the trophy hunt of grizzly bears. We think, too, that some MLAs in the northern parts of British Columbia are worried about losing their seats. They won't get reelected if they oppose the hunt. And the Guide Outfitters Association and the BC Wildlife are powerful lobby groups who donate to the Liberal campaigns.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering if our government has, you said during when the NDP was in power, there were some changes to protect grizzly bears. Can you tell us a bit about the history of what our government has done to help grizzlies in the past and what we need to see from them right now?
Right. Our government is very focused on counting bears, and their systems to date have been pretty inaccurate. You know, the conservation scientists think that there may be 6,000 bears. The government estimates there are 15,000. That's a huge discrepancy in numbers. The provincial government designated 9 populations in southern BC as threatened and closed some areas immediately bordering those threatened populations, closed those areas to hunting. But they seem primarily concerned with methods for counting bears, and I would honestly have to say I think they're more concerned with sustaining the hunt than with preserving grizzly bears on their home range. Now, the Committee on the Status of Wildlife in Canada has advised twice in the past 10 years that grizzlies be upgraded beyond a species of special concern, which is where they are federally, a species of special concern. And in BC, they are identified as blue listed, which means they're a species sensitive to human encroachment. BC has no species at risk standalone legislation, so that's something that really needs to change for our grizzly bears, because their historic range went across North America and as far south as Mexico. And we now are seeing BC as one of the last safe havens in all of North America.
Can you tell us more about grizzlies themselves and why we owe so much of our attention?
You know, if you ever have an opportunity to see grizzly bears, a lot of people haven't. And if you see them in the wild, you realize they're mostly focused on finding food and mates for the 6 to 7 months that they're awake. They are a keystone species. They disperse nutrients throughout the forest. They drag salmon into the forest. They feed these incredible forests that we have here. They aerate the soil by digging. They're primarily omnivores. 90% of their food comes from vegetation, plant material. They signify the health of an ecosystem. If you have healthy grizzly bears, you've got healthy ecosystems, and that is vibrant forests, clean water, clean air, and we all depend on that. We are all connected, and we're all connected to grizzly bears. In addition, they're an intelligent feeling animal. They form complex mental maps to find food. They're slow to reproduce. Females only breed at the age of about 5 or 6, and the young stay with them for 2 winters, so it's about 3 years, at which point the young remain close to the mother's range and then disperse slowly, so they're slow to disperse. They play, they strategize, they learn from one another. A recent video from Night Inlet in the Great Bear Rainforest shows that one grizzly figured out how to dive for fish.
Wow.
And was then copied So they're amazingly intelligent, feeling animal. And in my view, it's criminal to just kill them for sport.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I was watching actually part of the documentary that you have on your website, featuring Charlie Russell.
And
that was a great story. And it's just, it's amazing. People see these animals as vicious or dangerous, and like they're this big threat to us. But you know, you see how, you know, if you treat them with respect, then more often than not, they're going to mind their own business as well.
Exactly. That's exactly right. They're really very nonchalant when you see them on their home range, and they're quick to sense when they're threatened. So it really makes no sense to me that they would be on somebody's wall or floor.
Absolutely. So what can listeners do to help end the trophy hunt and protect grizzly bears in BC?
You know, there's quite a bit that you can do. And in fact, we're really pleased to see that the Auditor General is currently investigating the provincial government's management of grizzly bears, looking for potential overkilling that's happening. Any listeners who feel that they have information relevant to grizzly bears being killed excessively in their area could write to the Auditor General and have that included. You can inform yourself about grizzly bears, their true nature, through my website, through Bears Matter website, through understandingbears.com, Pacific Wild, Grain Coast Conservation, and the Brown Bears Research Project is another great site. You can write letters. All of the addresses are on my website, justiceforbcgrizzlies.com. Writing letters to Steve Thompson, Minister of Forest of Lands, Natural Resources Operations, Mary Polak, Minister of Environment. Talk to your MLAs and write letters to your MLA. Keep the issue front and center leading up to the election on May 9th next year. Ask all political candidates where they stand on the grizzly bear hunt once those town hall meetings start. And take the pledge. Please take the pledge. Go to justiceforbcgrizzlies.com. Take the pledge. And if any of the listeners that want pledge cards, we've got Christmas craft fairs coming up. Anybody who has a table at a craft fair, send me your address at justiceforbcgrizzlies@telus.net. I will send you some pledge cards and our image that you can use for a poster. And let's get that word spread far and wide that this is a social justice issue, that BC grizzlies are at risk. This is one of their last safe havens, and we have to help them out. Our lives depend on it, too.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Val, for coming on the show today to inform us about BC's grizzly bear trophy hunt and about the fight to protect these amazing animals in our province. Please visit the Justice for BC Grizzlies website at justiceforbcgrizzlies.com for more information and to sign the pledge to help end trophy hunting of BC's grizzly bears. You can also find a link to the pledge on our website, animalvoices.org. And thanks again, Val, for coming on the show today.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Bye now.
Bye. All right. Right into the news then. All right. So, Shauna, I think you had something for us today.
I do. Some good news, actually. Bowmanville Zoo closes for good after animal abuse claims against the director. The director stepped down earlier this year after he was charged with animal cruelty after a video was released by People for Ethical Treatment of Animals, where he is shown mistreating a Siberian tiger during training. That's great that the zoo closed down, but the only problem right now is that the future of the animals are very uncertain. They don't know what's going to happen to them. And
I heard that some of them are going to other zoos, so that didn't seem like a very happy ending.
Well, no, I haven't. In the actual news story, it says that they might go there, they might not. They're not 100% sure. They're trying to find placement for them. So it's great that the zoo closes down. I hope these animals can go to sanctuaries. But in the meantime, all of the staff that were laid off, a lot of them are staying behind so that they can help take care of the animals until they find different places for them. The great step in the right direction is that the zoo closed down because of animal cruelty charges. So I hope that happens to future zoos as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's something. There's been some more good news as well. Last week, on the topic of this show, actually. Last week, Romania banned trophy hunting. And banned all trophy hunting of brown bears, wolves, lynx, and wildcats, which I believe comprises the general targets there. Romania is home to more large carnivores than anywhere else in the EU. And the number of these animals being shot has been growing every year since Romania joined the European Union in 2007. In the past decade, hunting has grown into a multi-million euro industry there. But the country's environment minister explained that hunting for money was already illegal, but was allowed to take place anyway because of a loophole in European law, which allows the killing of wild animals that have proven to be a danger to humans. But, of course, hunters have been abusing this clause as a cover for trophy hunting. So the ban was implemented to get things back on track. So good luck to you, Romania, and let's hope that we hear some more stuff like this here in BC as well.
The world is changing. That's awesome. It starts in Romania. It'll happen here in Canada. It'll happen in South Africa.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Speaking of changes and shifts in views in the world. So Tyson Foods last Monday, Tyson Foods is the largest meat company in the U.S. by sales. They're a chicken processor. So Tyson Foods has acquired a 5% stake in Beyond Meat, which is a vegan company that makes meat alternatives. And previous investors for this company are Bill Gates, who is vegan and has been active in animal cruelty campaigns, as well as the Humane Society of the United States, which has participated in previous funding and which has criticized Tyson Foods' treatment of animals in the past. But Tyson won't have a seat on the board or anything. It's just an investment. And it's cool because why are these big food companies wanting to get involved with these vegan businesses?
Because they're seeing it's lucrative.
Yeah, it's lucrative. It's
we're going to do a show about that in the future. It's the time.
Right on. Yeah, Maple Leaf Foods in Canada as well has said, you know, we view ourselves as a protein company first. And they've apparently dedicated several staff in the past year to working on plant-based protein products. So that's good news for the environment and for animals.
That's awesome. Other news is Alpro, a Belgium soy-based food company, they released an apology to vegans and plant-based activists everywhere because earlier this week they did a tweet saying a healthy diet consists of 2/3 of plant-based food and 1/3 of animal-based protein. Of course, of course, the vegan community was absolutely outraged, and then they apologized, claiming the tweet was worded poorly, and they didn't mean to imply that you need to eat meat to be healthy, and they always encourage everyone to eat more plant-based foods, as they specialize in making sustainable and tasty plant-based products. So that's that.
Yeah, I guess we're seeing a shift in consumers. These companies are seeing that people aren't buying so easily, that that we need meat for protein, we need animal products for protein. That's a good thing.
Well, thank you both for the news, Sinead and Shauna.
Don't be a passive listener. Give us money or be an active listener, become a member. We know where you live. We'll come and find you if you don't donate. Vancouver Co-op Radio CFRO 100.5 FM. We need your money.
Yeah, we need your money. We know where you live if you won't donate. That was interesting. So speaking of our follow member drive, I need to put in another plug. And you are listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. In case you're not attuned to what our show is about, we are an animal advocacy public affairs program, and we promote compassionate living. And today's show is dedicated to the end of trophy hunting. I hope you'll stick around for our interview that's coming up in just about a minute. But I just wanted to say as well is that we do need your support to keep the show on the air. Co-op Radio is an all-volunteer run radio station, and we are able to put on this important programming here on the station because we are not a commercially led radio station. We don't have commercials. We rely on donations. So if that compels you at all to donate whatever you can, we ask that you please give us a call or go on our website. website, cooperadio.org, and click on Make a Donation, or you can give us a call right now at 604-684-8494 or anytime, and please state that you want to support Animal Voices, and we will appreciate that so much. And now for our interview. Our feature interview today is with Bruce Young. He's the co-director of the documentary film called Blood Lions, which investigates and exposes the canned lion hunting industry in South Africa. This film follows acclaimed environmental journalist and safari operator Ian Mickler and Rick Swayze, an American hunter, on their journey to uncover the realities about the multi-million dollar predator breeding and canned lion hunting industries in South Africa. They spoke to trophy hunters, operators, and breeders, as well as recognized lion ecologists, conservationists, and animal welfare experts. Today, Bruce is here with us to tell us about some of the discoveries he made while making the film and his campaign to end the industry. Hello, Bruce, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Thank you, Allison. Thank you for having me on.
Well, thank you for coming on the show today to speak with us about this really incredible film. I had a chance to watch it myself this week, and I was stunned at the information that was shared in it. There's a lot about the whole industry that I hadn't been aware of before, and I'm sure that most of our listeners aren't aware of this information. So thank you for making the film about it to educate the world. Now, for those of our listeners who have not even heard of the term canned hunting before, for those who imagine hunting as being an idyllic process where the hunter goes into the forest to prey on a wild animal living in its natural surroundings, can you tell us what is the difference between canned hunting and the traditional hunting that we know of?
The big difference, Allison, is the fact that a canned hunt is absolutely guaranteed. The term "it's in the can" is pretty well known to everyone. And so that is the first clue to the big con that is visited upon many people, hunters specifically in this instance. They're told that they're coming to hunt a wild lion, but actually what they're coming to shoot is a lion that has been hand-reared by often unknowing or ignorant volunteers who don't know that the cubs that they are raising are going to be used or sold on to hunting operators eventually. But the hunter that comes to South Africa to hunt this lion is basically told that he can get it within a couple of days. And often that's an exaggeration, because we have it in the film, the hunter's saying to us on camera that we can get the lion in a couple of hours if we really want to, if we're in a hurry. So it's really the bargain basement, El Cheapo, really down and dirty, nasty side of hunting. And as I say to some of the hunters who get very defensive and aggressive, who we've engaged with, you guys are being conned. You're being told this is a wild animal, a wild lion that you're shooting and going to take home and mount on your wall in your trophy room. But, you know, this is an animal that's been fed through a fence or from the back of a truck by people. And so when it's in the bush, and it's usually been released into the bush literally hours before the hunter arrives, when this animal sees people, he thinks he's going to be fed. And so he ambles over towards them and is not really trying to escape or evade the hunters, which is what a wild lion would do instinctively, is get away from people, you know. So coming back to your question, a canned hunt is a guaranteed kill within a very short period of time. One reason, because the animal has been hand-reared and is habituated to animal to humans, and another is because the area in which the hunt takes place is usually a relatively small, not a real wild area that a lion could have a reasonable chance of escape. So it's not a fair chase hunt at all.
And can you give us an idea about the prevalence of these canned lion hunting services in South Africa? How many lions are being kept in captivity this way, and how many operations are there?
The figures are, even from the authorities that we've engaged with, even from the Predator Association, who claims to have a sort of to be in control of their members, even they can't give us hard and fast figures. But the closest estimate is that there are at least 6,000 to 8,000 captive bred lions in South Africa at the moment. But we feel, from what we found in our research and the making of Bloodlines, is that the number is probably way over 8,000 and closer to 10, you know.
Wow. So I want to talk about who is partaking as customers in this canned lion hunting service in this industry. And what is the process as to how someone would even find an operation like this from across the world? And then they put their money down, they sign up for it. They're told you can get a lion in about 3 days. Then they go in and take part in this hunt, and then they take their dead lion trophy home. Can you give us just sort of a walkthrough of how this happens, and how does it start? Like, who does it start with?
It starts with a hunter who often doesn't have the top dollar, who wants to come to Africa. And he or she, because there are an increasing number of women hunters coming to South Africa these days, they save up their dollars and they want to come and get something that is guaranteed, and in a shorter time. They want a bargain price. So what do you do when you want anything these days? You go online, and you basically shop for your lion online, and the hunting operations often have a series of images of lions, ranging from young females that are sort of bottom price, $5,000 to $10,000 for a young sort of immature female lion, way up until the big black maned male lions who can go for over $100,000 to $120,000. And so it's these hunters that want something quick and easy. Often time is an issue with them, time and money, so they want a bargain. And those are the guys who are coming to South Africa. And the figures that we have are that 65% to 70% at least of the hunters that come to South Africa are from the US. There are numbers of Europeans that come, and Eastern Europeans in particular. We came across a number of Russians and Eastern European bloc hunters coming to hunt. But the vast majority are hunters from the US, and that's why this trip that I'm doing over the next few weeks to a number of cities on the West Coast and a couple of cities, Fort Worth in Texas and Chicago in the Midwest, it's critical that the word gets out in the US that this is what is going on, because the biggest reaction we've had to our film is surprise, even from South Africans. So you talked about your listeners who might not know what this mm-hmm. industry is about. In South Africa itself, people were more often than not surprised that this industry is still happening. It going back a little bit, I know I'm jumping around, but I'm going to give you a little bit of history. The industry was first exposed in 1997 when a British investigative TV program came to South Africa and exposed the fact that lions were being bred, and in those days drugged and shot in very small enclosures, and so the industry was suddenly it was made public in 1997, and it took a number of years, nearly 10 years, for the South African government to do anything about this, because there was obviously an outcry about it, and the South African government tried to regulate the industry. They didn't try and shut it down, but they tried to regulate it, and they passed their laws, but the industry, the breeders and the hunters, obviously they were threatened. They challenged this in court, And they got the law was repealed on a technicality, and the initial law got a lot of publicity, and people thought, okay, that's the industry shut down. The challenge and the appeal, which got through, no one heard about it. It slipped under the radar, and so the industry flourished. Suddenly, it boomed in the year since 2009, 2010. It's really taken off, and Ian Mickler, who's the lead character in our film, is a journalist and a safari operator and a conservationist. He's been following the story since, you know, for 17, 18 years now, and he's the guy who takes our viewers, takes our film, takes you through the story of this industry and what goes on and what it means. Yeah, it's been around for a long time, and people really don't know about it. And this film has fortunately had a very wide exposure, largely because of the killing of Cecil. Cecil the Lion in Zimbabwe was shot a couple of weeks before we released in July 2015, last year, at the Durban International Film Festival. And the news broke literally days after we premiered. And the reaction, which I'm sure most people are aware of, there was this, you know, wildfire reaction to the killing of Cecil. And then behind that came our film, which filled in the blanks, exposed some of the, you know, the other darker aspects of this industry.
So I wanted to talk about the breeding facilities in South Africa, because there's really two parts to the industry. There's the farms that hold the lions to be killed, where the hunters go, but then they get them from places that breed them. So can you explain to us the process of the breeding part of the industry for these lions in South Africa? How does that all happen?
Well, if you think about any industry, they need a ready supply of product. And so as the hunting industry in South Africa has grown, they needed more and more lions, and the one way to get more lions for their hunting operations was to breed them intensively. And just to explain the breeding process in the wild for lions, a female lion will rear her cubs. Her cubs will stay with her for 18 to 24 months. So 1.5 to 2 years, the cubs will remain in the pride with their mother. Then as soon as they move on, she'll come into estrus again and breed again. So roughly every 2 years is how often a female lion in the wild will breed. What these breeders do is, as soon as the cubs are born, literally sometimes within days, we have people on film in our film admitting that they remove the cubs, they pull the cubs from the mother, from the female lioness, 2 to 3 days or up to 2 to 3 weeks, and remove them and rear them by hand. Now, she's lost her cubs, she comes into estrus again immediately. And unfortunately, in a sense, for lions, they breed very easily in captivity. So she will then be put in with a male and get pregnant again. So she can breed 3, 4, 5 times more in a captive situation than she would in the wild. So these females are completely worn out within 3 or 4 years. The images, and this is where the welfare of breeding farms is just horrific, and actually how our film got made. Producer Pippa Hankinson had occasion to go onto one of these breeding farms, which she didn't know anything about, and she was so appalled at what she saw on these farms, the condition of these lions, because obviously when you breed so intensively, the genetics are they're shot within a couple of rounds of breeding. And so what she saw on this farm just convinced her that she had to do something about this, and she decided to make this film and get the word out and at least inform people. So yeah, going back to the breeding, that you said there are two elements of exploitation for these captive bred lions, but actually, Alison, there are five legs to this whole exploitative process, and it starts with the intensive breeding. Then, when the cubs are pulled from their mothers, they need to be hand reared. So these farmers soon realized that there was a trend in tourism over the last 10 years called voluntourism. Young people, students often, want to do something good in the world, as well as travel, as well as vacation. And often they're drawn to conservation issues or wildlife. And these farms have advertised this thing called voluntourism, where volunteers can come. Ironically, they're not actually volunteering. They're paying huge sums of money, $2,000 to $3,000 US for 2 to 3 weeks to work on these farms and raise these cubs by hand. They bottle feed them, and then not only do these volunteers work on these farms, but the farm opens up for what's called cub petting. So you've got the breeding, you've got the voluntourism, and now you've got tourists paying for an hour or two to come onto your farm and cuddle these extremely cute and appealing young cubs and have photographs taken. And everyone is told that these cubs are orphaned lions and that they're going to be returned to the wild as part of the big conservation effort that this farm is involved in. And most of these farms who spread this word amongst the tourists, the voluntourists, and the average tourist who wants to engage with these cubs are being lied to, basically. It's completely dishonest. And so that's one of the main reasons that we made this film is to inform people that what they're paying money towards and what they're doing with these cubs is part of a big scam. Then, so that's breeding, voluntourism, cub petting, walking. When the lions get a little bit bigger than cubs, two to three years old, they're sub adults. They now have this element to the whole process where you can go and walk with your lion in the wild with a number of handlers, and this is also supposedly a great thing to do, to have, you know, Facebook profile pictures taken with lions. And the sequence that we shot in the film, the two lions that the group goes walking with and our cameraman, and they're quite happy for cameras to be on, you know, they're very used to people wanting to take cameras on these walks and things. The two lions, if you look at them, you can tell just by looking at them that they're probably drugged and very, very docile and handled with big chunks of meat, you know, on the walk. And if you recall that sequence from the film, I don't know what you thought of those lines, but it's highly likely they were drugged. So then it's walking with lions, and then as soon as they get too big to even walk with, that's when they sold on to either to hunting operations or to, there's a big business with wild animals in the Middle East, you know, these rich young men mostly want to have these lions. It's a very macho thing to have these lions in compounds on their mansions and wherever they live. There's some a number of other horrific documentaries of how these animals are treated in those situations. And so lions from South Africa are either sold on to hunting operations or often to these private individuals who want to keep wild animals as house pets, basically. And then the final exploitation of the whole in the whole business is the recently explosion of the lion bone industry, and that's another whole shocking element to the story, is that in the East, tiger bone wine has been a traditional drink for hundreds of years, but a number of years ago, China began clamping down on the hunting or the use of tigers. So they were looking for replacement animals, and obviously lions came pretty close. So lion bones are, you know, when a hunter comes to hunt his animal, he gets the head and the pelt, the skin, to take back to his hunting room and mount it on the wall. But the bones, the hunting operator is quite legally allowed to sell the bones on to anyone who wants to buy them. And so there's this new trade where lion bones are sold on to merchants in the Far East. So this industry, you can see why it's boomed in the last few years, because there are just all these different elements to the exploitation, to the whole cycle of a lion's life.
Yeah, with something just so, I guess, complex and convoluted, we wonder how is there hope, but there is some hope, and you have talked about that in your film, and I think a large part of the hope is getting the information out there, as you're doing by getting this film out to expose the industry. But also, in the film, you mentioned the government of Australia has taken steps against the canned lion hunt in South Africa. Can you tell us about this and how perhaps Australia can be a leader for other countries to follow?
Absolutely. Well, there are two ways that we decided we could approach the shutting down of this industry. One is by approaching the South African government, the Department of Environmental Affairs here, and try and get them to change the law. And the other way was to affect the demand. It's a process called demand reduction. You try and inform people, and you get other countries to affect, to shut down the legality of the importing of the lion parts and the body parts and the. And Australia was, they're not a huge hunting country, but they very courageously took the lead, because this was an issue that their Department of Environmental Affairs, you know, they engaged with and looked at very closely. And a number of wildlife conservationists in Australia worked very hard to get their law passed. So they were the first. Then, since then, France have followed suit. They've banned the import, and then the Netherlands. So there are now three countries that have banned the import of lion body parts, which for these trophy hunters, the big thing is taking their trophy home and telling stories about how amazing they were to shoot this wild animal. So if they can't bring their trophies home, then it makes it less likely that they're going to want to come and hunt in South Africa.
So finally, I just wanted to get your perspective on the perspective of the hunters themselves. I know you interviewed lots of hunters in the process of making this film. You got their stories as to why they partake in canned hunting and why they love it. They think they are actually doing a good thing for the planet by killing these innocent beings. Some of the reasons given in the film were that they do it for conservation, as killing these bred lions in captivity takes the pressure off the wild herds, one person said. And one hunter hunter in the film also said, if it wasn't for the hunter, the lion wouldn't be there, and at least it has a purpose in life. So I'm just wondering if you can comment on that kind of perspective of these hunters that you interviewed.
Alison, in my opinion, and remember, I came to this project not as a conservationist or an animal rightist. I came as a filmmaker. I've been a filmmaker mm-hmm. all my life, and I was drawn to this project because it seemed like there was something wrong on the surface, and if I could find a way to open up something that seemed was wrong, then there was reason to. There was a good reason to make a film as powerful as possible, and in my humble opinion, the people, a lot of the people who we talked to and got to interview for our film, they're operating from two points. One is ignorance; they do not know the real story, and even when presented with evidence, when we would ask them or say, "Did you know that this is the reality?" Their ignorance was replaced with arrogance. So they very arrogantly told us that we didn't know what we were talking about. So ignorance and arrogance is the one element of the people, of many of the people that I engaged with, and then ego is huge in this type of hunting. There are far more ethical hunters who find the canned hunting industry, because our film was very specifically focused on canned hunting, not the broader trophy hunting industry. And we tried, you know, they overlap obviously, but we try to draw distinctions between the two. And there are hunters who find the canned hunting industry completely repugnant, and it gives their industry, their ethical hunting industry, as shall we call it, a bad name. But this ego within many of the hunters that we spoke to, people who need to have their sense of self heightened somehow by telling, and they're quite open about the fact that they go home and tell stories about this animal on the wall that has been set by the taxidermist, set into a pose to make it look as fearsome as possible, so that their reputation or their image in front of their friends or their family or whoever is heightened in some way. So yeah, if that answers your question, ignorance, arrogance, and ego are a big part of the people that we engaged with who are involved or come to partake in these canned hunts.
So finally, you have a campaign to have this hunting practice stopped. You're asking people to join in on the campaign for these lions that are bred for the bullet. Can you explain to our listeners how they can help?
This is hard to say, actually, because very recently, last week at the CITES International Conference in South Africa, held in South Africa for the first time, I think, CITES is the Convention for the International Trade in Endangered Species. And this is where largely governments, as I understand it, I'm learning a lot about this side of the political side of conservation. As I understand it, the governments or government representatives come together and vote on what levels of protection they will accord to various endangered species, and it was our big hope and a focal point of our campaign that lions would be, the level of protection for lions would be raised, so that there would be agreement amongst international, you know, bodies and governments in particular that trade in these species would not be allowed. And what we'd hoped to achieve didn't happen. So governments and people in power obviously feel that if a business, if there's an industry that's sustainable, that makes money, then that's what's important, rather than a deep sense of finding a way to conserve, truly conserve endangered species. So going back to your question, what can people do? Awareness, communication, supporting any effort. Our website is a focal point for much that people can get involved with, writing to their representatives. But basically, as I try and say to people who watch the film when I do Q&A afterwards, any kind of change in terms of our relationship with the wild, with the natural world, with the other species with whom we share the planet, any kind of real change is going to come from us, the average man, people on the street, not from governments, not from the top down. It's gonna come from grassroots. And it's not always a clear, easy path to say to people, if you do this, this will happen. But awareness and a shift in people's hearts is what will ultimately bring about the deep change which is necessary. If you look historically at any sort of heinous activity that humans we've been involved with over the centuries, the deep change, slavery, I'm just thinking of one, something that has been changed by people who just feel ultimately that something is wrong. You know, I hate to be not to be able to give concrete answers to that question, because everyone wants to know how can we help and what will it take, and this is my answer is it's up to us to spread the word, to be aware, to be conscious, and if you ever do come to Africa or South Africa in particular, and you come to a farm and people have cubs and you want to pet them, or you want, you know, you want to get close to them, consider the questions. The film offers you the real questions that you should ask, and not be satisfied with the sort of con that is presented to many tourists. Be conscious of your relationship with the wild in every way, wherever you're from, whatever country you live in. Because we all have wild spaces wherever we live.
I think that's all great advice. Thank you for coming on the show today, Bruce, to tell us about your film Blood Lions, which screens here in Vancouver at the Rio Theatre on October 30th at 12:30 p.m. with the director, Bruce Young, in attendance for a question and answer period afterwards. You can also find out more about the film at bloodlions.org. Thanks so much for your time today, Bruce. Have a great day.
Thank you, Alison.
So now is your chance to win two pairs, or one pair each, of tickets to this film screening. And we're going to do a draw. We had a lot of entries on Facebook this week. So we can, do you want to put that right up to the mic? We can hear the papers ruffling in the draw there. Sinead's got them. Yeah, so lots of entries. This is happening on October 30th, 2:30 p.m. at the Rio Theater. Bruce Young will be there himself. So if there's a question that we didn't ask, you can ask him yourself. And Jen will be there as well. So, Sinead, what I would like you to do is if you can draw out two names and read them, and those are going to be your winners.
All right, first name, Patrick Bainton.
Oh, congratulations, Patrick. That's my coworker. So thanks for listening, and yay.
Wonderful. Okay. And winner number two is Maxine Sullivan.
Congratulations, Maxine. So we'll be sending you messages on Facebook and letting you know how you can claim your tickets to the screening of Blood Lions.
You've been listening to Animal Voices Radio Show on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Please join us for next week's show on October 21st. And Jen, can you tell us a little bit about next show?
Yes, we're going to be featuring two interviews on the topics of the fur industry and Canada's animal welfare laws, namely Bill C-246, which didn't get passed, unfortunately. Join us for a discussion with animal justice lawyer Kemiel Labchak and the fur bearer defenders Adrian Nelson.
We here at the Animal Voices Show modestly ask you to keep connected with Animal Voices via the World Wide Web. You can do so by signing up for our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And please do send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Also, please do check out our website, animalvoices.org, where our shows can be also downloaded from. And if you appreciate the work that we do here every week at Animal Voices to bring you original quality programming on the topics of current animal issues and the vegan lifestyle, now is the time to show your support. During our fall member drive, please show your support by making a donation to us at Animal Voices at Co-op Radio, because we do rely on your donations to keep the show on the air. To make a donation of $5, $10, or $20, or whatever you can afford, simply go to cooperadio.org and click on Donate Now.
Yeah, and I just wanted to mention, too, it can be more than $20. If you make a donation of $25 or more, you'll actually be eligible for a tax receipt, so you'll save some money on your taxes. Now, what I like to do is I have a sustaining membership, which means I have a small amount, $5, that's taken from my bank account every month, and we really prefer those types of memberships if possible. It's really easy to do. You never have to think about renewing, and then we have that guaranteed income every year. So you can also give us a call right now, 604-684-8494, if you enjoyed the show that we presented to you today and all our past shows, which can be heard on animalvoices.org.
And to close the show, we'll be playing a song dedicated to the lions called Lions in the Wild by Martin Garrix and the Third Party. Stay tuned now for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Looking out for a new horizon, reaching out, I can almost see the place. Holding on with a heart that's frozen in the dark, but I am not afraid. No, I am not afraid. We'll be free, but I don't know where we're going. You dog.